Yep, it's 7 o'clock.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome everyone to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Leanne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leanne.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use the restroom and the room in here. Exclusively, the restrooms are across the hall and up a short flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will help keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. They may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are going to be discussing step two. And I'd like to welcome our panel this evening. We have Mark and Jesse that are going to be here tonight sharing their experience.
Can I help you?
He was eyeballing you.
We're going to be reading out of the fourth edition of the Big Book, and I'll read the first paragraph, which starts on page 44,
I'm
and then the panel
one.
Will share for a few minutes on the reading.
44.
So step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Page 44. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if, when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only your spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life, or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Nothing like half of us thought we were atheists, or something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral, we could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem.
Okay. Mark, would you like to start?
You're going to stop there, huh?
Okay. We'll read more later.
My name is Mark Gilbert, an alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
My sobriety date is July 4th, 1991. My home group is the Big Book Topic Group. We meet in Hampton on Friday night at 7 p.m. It's a closed Big Book discussion meeting. And we also have a beginner's meeting on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, which is really my favorite meeting. We sit around on a bunch of little couches in a small room, and it's nice and intimate. And so anyway, if you're about that way, come and visit us. It's the corner of Armistead and Victoria in downtown Hampton, right next to the library. In the big church there, you can't miss it. It's huge. So, all right. So I guess when she read this, you know, it says if you can't quit drinking, that's really, I mean, that's my problem, but my story is a little bit different because I quit drinking and I was sentenced to AA meetings by the military and went through a treatment program. And basically what I did for 6 years, I just didn't drink. And, you know, I'd go to meetings every now and then and I'd do a little service work. I would do certain things, but I never did anything that was suggested in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at the end of that 6 years, I took drunk and stayed drunk for 18 months. And it was a horrible 18 months. And I got in some more trouble, and the Navy decided I needed to stop drinking. They wanted to kick me out of the Navy. I ended up in another treatment center and said it was going to be different. And for the next 5.5 years, I just didn't drink. And at the end of that 5.5 years, I came to that jumping off place that the Big Book talks about. You know, that loneliness and despair is the only alcoholic knows. And I felt like I was going to explode from the inside out. I thought I was going to spontaneously combust. I was pulling my own hair, beating my head in the walls. I was going absolutely insane. I was dying. And I didn't want to drink, and I couldn't kill myself. My father committed suicide due to alcohol and drugs when he was 42 years old. So this went on for a little bit of time, and certain things happened, and I won't go into all those details. But, you know, eventually I called on a Friday night. I called Alcoholics Anonymous because it was the only thing I knew to do, and I came back to some meetings, and I went to several, and I finally went to a meeting where they were talking about the first 164 pages of the Big Book, and they said, if you want what we have, you got to do what we do. And I guess what I was kind of thinking about a little bit earlier was, I was going to tell you that I took the day off work today, and I studied all day so I could get this all right, but that's not really true. but I was thinking about, in the end of the doctor's opinion, where it said he became sold on the ideas contained in this book, and I was thinking about once my sponsor got me into the doctor's opinion, I read about all that, and I learned and studied it and went through it the way he had me go through it. And I looked up words that I thought I knew, and I started to understand the difference between an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic, and I started to really relate and say, you know, this is me, this is me, this is me. You know, when I became sold on the ideas contained in the book, I guess basically just by completing the first up to the doctor's opinion, you know, I was sold. I mean, I don't know why. And it wasn't like I hadn't heard these things before. And it wasn't like I hadn't been in meetings and I hadn't, you know, but I just couldn't hear until I could hear. And I'm going to see. There was a lot in here, so I'll make sure I kind of cover everything. Oh, it says to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. And I remember my sponsor, whenever he would ask me to do anything and I would balk, he would say, "What choice do you have?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, you have two choices. One, live by spiritual principles, or die an alcoholic death." And at that point in my life, what I started to realize when he would tell me those things is that for me, I didn't have to drink ever again to die an alcoholic death. And I didn't have to die and go 6 feet under to die an alcoholic death. I was dying the alcoholic death because I was spiritually, I was completely bankrupt in every area of my life. So when it talks about this power, and when it talks about, you know, that lack of power was my dilemma, well, you know, I thought that, you know, I was doing fine, you know, because when I wasn't drinking, I remember when I first came to AA the first time in 1983 in Long Beach, California, I had this guy that sponsored me, and I remember him telling me whatever I wanted, just pray for it. He said, "If you want a house with a white picket fence and, you know, a couple cars and a driveway and a wife, pray for it." And I thought, well, that sounds pretty good. So that's what I prayed for, and that's what I got, you know. And, you know, at the end of that last 5.5 years, that wife wanted a divorce, to just put it simple. You know, because I was the alcoholic without the booze, and I was trying to manage my own life in every area. And where it says, you know, he says, our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly, and they had. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous this last time, I felt like every decision I'd ever made in my life was a bad one. And I relied, you know, solely on my sponsor. I wouldn't do anything without talking to my sponsor. You know, I wanted some kind of guidance on what to do. And then it says, lack of power that was there dimly had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves.
Obviously.
But then, you know, and when I was growing up, you know, I ended up in a foster home when I was in the seventh grade, and it was a Christian family, you know, and so they went to church all the time, and, you know, I got baptized, I got saved, and I believed, and I started to believe in miracles, and, you know, but none of these miracles were happening in my life. But I believed in miracles, and I did all these things, and I believed all that stuff. So it wasn't like I didn't believe in God. But when I came here the last time, I couldn't get in touch with any of that. I just couldn't feel any of that stuff. And I'll just kind of leave it right there for now. Okay. So.
Thanks, Mark. Jesse?
Thanks, Mark. I'm Jesse, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jesse.
My sobriety date is March 1st, 2008. I have a sponsor. He has a sponsor. And he has a sponsor. I know because I've met them. And that's kind of how it's always been for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the first real, you know, advice I took, you know, when I called my dad, he had been in the rooms for a while, and I told him that I thought I had a drinking problem, you know, the epiphany that I had, which he already knew. But, you know, he told me to do AA, you know, stick with the winners and get a sponsor, you know, and for whatever reason, those things stuck with me. And since I've been in AA, I've done that, you know, and I know that that saved my life. You know, I haven't had to wander around in AA just hoping that it, you know, going to meetings works. You know, my sponsor took me through the book, you know, as soon as I was willing and able to do this stuff, you know, and I had tried Jesse's way for long enough that when I finally got told that I had to come to AA, I was willing to give this a shot because all of my stuff failed utterly. And this quickly became my favorite chapter, especially as I grew in sobriety, because I was an agnostic, you know. So here's a chapter like directed at me, you know, and when I read this whole thing, it just answers all the questions that have been floating through my head, you know, through my whole life. You know, when I tried to build my code and philosophies in which to live life, you know, these were the questions that I had that had me not really want God in my life, you know, and this chapter, you know, just kind of told me that my thinking was flawed. And it was, especially when I got here. I remember I've had this conversation with Mark, you know, that it's not a brainwashing per se, but my brain, you know, I was thinking retarded, like it needed to be washed, you know, like, none of my thinking was correct. And so, you know, there's so much in these first, like, five paragraphs. You know, up to this point and finally reading the book, you know, and I became convinced of that I was an alcoholic with the simple definition that it has here, that when I honestly wanted to, you find that you can't quit entirely, you know, when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic, you know. And we went through my life and my sponsor went through his life, and we just were able to just, you know, lay down tons of examples how this is true, you know, and that I need to, you know, from that point just put a check mark and let's continue to move, you know. And I was always that guy that got ahead, you know. So when I read the steps on the wall and I saw that God was in them, you know, those were my first questions right off the bat. And like my sponsor and plenty of other people, you know, that I talked to just told me to, you know, like, shh, be quiet, we'll get to God later, you know, like, you know. And here we are, like, at the part where I, you know, I need to find him, you know, or let him into my life, because he was never really hiding. You know, it's kind of hard to hide when you're God. You just, I'm oblivious to God is what it is. I just can't see him hiding behind the tree. And he's like the big Godzilla looking guy, and I just don't see him. I just see a tree, because I don't want God in my life. But all the things I tried to do it on my own failed utterly, you know. And that's what this chapter, you know, helps me realize. You know, that my codes and philosophies were not enough. I remember, you know, that I had like the Jesse code, and that was what's going to get me through life. It's like the samurai code, only I made it. And slowly, like, all those things got eroded away, and I wasn't following them. And it was mostly because that's where alcohol had taken me. You know, I lost my mother in a drunk driving accident very young in my life, and I was like, I'm never going to drink and drive. You know, that will never happen. You know, and I would say, you know, months into my like drinking career, I was drinking and driving. You know, like the idea that I needed to sleep in my bed was more important than whether I did to another human being what happened to me. You know, that's another way how I know I was completely selfish when it came to, you know, what I wanted. But I would like wake up going like, whoa, I need to not do that again. Like, let's get back on the Jesse code. And I just couldn't marshal the will enough to do it, because it just happened over and over and over again. And so when I used up all my ideas and I let this happen, you know, that this program work, I, you know, saw that I had to find a power greater than myself. And I like that, you know, that's the exact point of this book. Because, you know, I had nothing. It had to be built from somewhere, and this book does it masterfully. You know, like Mark said, that this, I was sold on the ideas in the beginning, and I saw that it worked in you guys' life, and I had to have this thing. And so the next, you know, step is to just follow these suggestions and continue on this path. What else is there in this? There's so much stuff. the we agnostics things, you know, I've been told that I was probably fortunate enough that I had no relationship with God, that I could just build one from scratch instead of having to recover one from whatever relationship that I had before. And, you know, in part, I am very thankful of that. And when I work with newcomers and they have a God of their understanding, and they start asking me, like, why they need to read we agnostics, and it goes back to why we're here, you know, is that if and when we are finished with this thing, you are going to take another human being through this book, and they could be just like me. It says half of us almost are this way. So, you know, if you take two people, one of them is going to be an agnostic, and you need to be able to realize in your thinking and your drinking and your experiences still can align with this stuff, even though you yourself wasn't an agnostic. And I guess we'll end with that one right there and go to the next reading.
All right.
Thanks.
So we're going to continue on page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction. Provided we took other simple steps, we found that God does not make too hard terms those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive, or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men.
I like that part, you know, since I didn't have to just, that we need not to consider another's conception of God. And, you know, when I talked about being in that church years ago, well, when I first went to church with, when I was a little kid, my parents used to take us to this church, and it was German Lutheran, and I don't know if you know much about that, but, you know, I think back when I was a little, very, very small child, and I really thought the only reason my parents took us there, they would take us and drop us off, and then when church was over, we'd go over to these other people's house across the street and wait for our parents to come get us. And as I got older, I thought they were doing it just so you go home and have sex, you know, when the kids are gone. And they were just getting rid of us, you know. And so I kind of had a little resentment about that. And then, but I just remember this, like there was a stage up there and it was kind of high and like maybe that place back there. And I just remember this big, huge monster yelling at us and damning us and telling us we're going to hell. And I mean, I was terrified. I was really terrified. That's what I remember of that experience. But then when I'm in this Baptist church, I remember all these people saying, well, you know, you shouldn't smoke and you shouldn't do these things and you shouldn't do that. And and then I would go out and leave church and everybody's doing what they say they shouldn't do. And I thought, well, something's not right about all this. So that was kind of my experience then. So when I got to have my own conception of God, I thought, well, that's pretty neat, you know. And, you know, that way I could make the approach. And then it said, we found that God does not make too hard of terms with those who seek him. And what was unique about that, when we were in this portion, and I was just, you know, and I'm in the Navy, and I'm doing these retirement ceremonies. I was a bosun mate, and I was piping, and me and this other guy, we had this thing that we did, and everybody wanted us to do their retirement ceremony. So we were requested all over to retire all these people. And we did one out in Chesapeake at this little church way out. I can't remember where it was at, but it was just a little teeny tiny church out in Chesapeake. And the guy who retired was, you know, doing his little talk in the church, you know, and he was just saying about, you know, he reiterated so much about his life and about his finding God and saying, seek and you shall find. And that's what he said. And when I retired out of the Navy, that's, you know, I pretty much told my story about how I recovered from alcoholism and all the things. That's basically what my talk was. It was kind of almost like an AA talk. I just let them know who I was, told them the truth was about me, and that was kind of my message, seek and you shall find. And I believe that's so true because, you know, it talks about in the ABCs in chapter 5, it says, you know, and how it worked at the end of how it works, you know, that no human power could relieve my alcoholism, that God could and would if he were sought. And, you know, there's another part where it talks, and we might get to that, but it says, are you, do you believe or are you even willing to believe, you know? And I don't even know that for me, that wasn't even necessary. You know, it was just necessary. What worked for me is I just did what my sponsor suggested that I do. Because obviously I had tried everything else and nothing else was working. And I was sold so far. So I said, well, the only way I'm going to find out is just to keep doing this. And I'm grateful that I had a sponsor that pushed me to continue to do these things. He didn't ever give up on me, you know. And he used to sometimes just tell me, he said, what choice do you have? You know, he said, or he would say, just do it, damn it. You know, I'm grateful for that because, you know, had I not, I don't know that I'd be sitting here today with you people. So that's all.
Thanks, Mark. That was like the weirdest idea to me that, you know, we did not need to consider another's conception of God. You know, before I had exhausted my abilities to quit on my own, I did like search spiritual means. I felt like there was a spiritual malady in me, and I did some soul searching, and I was looking into religions, and I was like, well, you know, similar to Mark, like all the things that I kind of grew up with, the, you know, church and how they acted, you know, the do as I say, not as I do, or I'm just gonna like preach to you and then go do the exact same thing out there, it turned me off long ago, you know. And you know, people doing things in the name of God, you know, and so Christianity, I was like, that one's done. I don't want anything to do with it, you know. And so when I came looking for spiritual answers of my own, I was even looking at Buddhism and, you know, reading books and trying to meditate with that. And then, you know, still things in that book, you know, there was a part I was reading, it was like, you need to be celibate. And I was like, well, this is no good. I don't want this either, you know. And I was always able to find things in these religions that I didn't want to do, or I didn't want to be a part of my life. And so, like, I thought I had to have all of them, like, for it to be, you know, for me to be following that religion or whatever it was. And so, you know, when one thing doesn't work, I just throw it away. And, you know, at that point, I went back to drinking and stopped searching for a spiritual means, you know. And because my mind, I'm like a logical creature, you know, like, I can't just make up ideas to believe in God. That's like making my own God, and I can't make my own God because I know he's not going to be real. I just made him up, you know. And and so I left it there. You know, I never even had that idea of like my own conception of God until, you know, I came into these rooms, you know. And it had to start off simple, you know, with questions like, you know, do you think God loves you? And it's yes. You know, do you think he, you know, is willing to forgive you for your, you know, for what you've done? Yes. You know, those simple things, patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. And I was like, yes, that's what I think God is. And he's like, well, that's all you need, you know. And then that's what I started with, you know. And then also the idea that you guys were believing in something higher than yourselves and staying sober, you know, that was another thing that, like, you know, had me believe, you know, that this could work for me. It's working for you guys, so I'm going to assume it's out there. You know, and as Mark said, like, what other choices do I have? I believe that I hope that I could not be sentenced to, like, a death sentence, you know, for being an alcoholic, that I wasn't going to die this way. So I had to believe that there was something out there that could fix me. So that, again, there's a, you know, a part of belief and faith, you know, and those are the little pebbles of faith that, like, started me in this process, you know, like, almost tricked in a way, like, to follow these little hunches, or that you guys knew what you were talking about, and what blossoms into a relationship with God. And it still, you know, confused the hell out of me when I was doing this stuff. You know, I just did the actions and didn't worry about, like, what God was, or if it was a him or a her. You know, I wasn't even fighting that, you know, philosophy anymore. Like, once we got to that idea that, like, are you willing to believe? And I said, yes, we just kind of continued on, and it built from that part, you know. And one of the big things that happened to me in my life, I, you know, that the idea that, like, people see it working in you before you see it in yourself, you know. And there's a couple of people at work that, like, thanked me, and even one of the big things that, like, let me know that I was on the right path is Dono. I saw Dono in her earlier. He gave me a card that said, like, I can see God working in your life, you know, things are turning out good, you know. And I was like a mind blown, you know, that this is actually working, you know, because all I was focused on was what was in front of me. And that's kind of what I still have to do today, just focus what's on there and not, like, question, like, my beliefs or whether they're real or not like that. I just need to have that faith that it is.
Thanks. Right over on page 47. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I not believe, or am I even willing to believe, there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
Wow. A little asterisk there, and at the bottom it says, please be sure to read Appendix 2 on a spiritual experience. And we're going to read
part of it?
Oh, okay. So I should leave that alone for right now?
We keep jumping ahead. We need to stay.
Well, it's hard, you know, it's really, for me, it's hard to talk about sometimes this step and not talk about step one, and this step and not talk about step three. You know, I mean, there's so many things. Because once you've done all these things, they just kind of all come together, you know, as one big whole. And do I believe, or am I even willing to believe? And I was never not willing to believe, and it's not that I didn't believe. Where I was at in my life was, I felt like it talked about in the doctor's opinion, I felt like I was doomed. I feared I had so many problems, or I had so many problems I feared of ever solving them. You know, and I just didn't believe that this was going to work for me. You know, it was fine for you, all y'all were doing well, and this worked for you, but I just really had that thing in the back of my mind that, yeah, okay, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do what you suggest, but I just feel like I'm too far gone, and that I'll never feel different. The way I felt on the inside, I was dying, and I just didn't believe that I would ever be able to feel different. And, you know, and then it says, we assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeated, proven among us, that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderful and effective spiritual structure can be built. And all I can tell you, and I won't say any more on this, but from my experience, that's what happened for me. Just by just doing, Jesse, I think, kind of talked, just doing the next right thing. You know, they say somewhere, it's not in our literature, but I know this last month in the Daily Reflections, it talks about the next right action. And, you know, I didn't know what the next right action is when I came here the last time. That's why I got a sponsor. My sponsor helped me to know what the next right action was, because I had no clue, absolutely none whatsoever. That's all.
Thanks,
Mark. Yeah, I feel like I almost dipped into that paragraph already. You know, when I made my phone calls, like I was in SARP when I, you know, was forced to come here, and they made me call people, which I didn't want to do, you know, and especially because I didn't know what to talk to these people about. But, you know, the big worry on my head was like, God, you know, how am I gonna get this guy that I considered like my nemesis? You know, like long ago when my mom died, I was like, how could a God let this happen? You're not any God of mine, you know, and I neatly evaded the God question. I put him away and I didn't want anything to do with him again, you know. And when I let him out of the box, like, please let me win the lotto, please let me hook up with this girl, you know, it failed again. And so he went right back in there. You know, I gave him plenty of opportunities to be my God, and he didn't want to be. So how am I supposed to get this guy that I'm not on good terms with this guy, and I'm supposed to get him on my team? And so when I made all my phone calls, it was always like, how do I find this God guy, and where does he hang out? You know, like, what do I got to do? And like I said earlier, like, every single one of those guys pretty much told me to not worry about it. You know, that let's focus on the thing at hand. You know, right now you're in SARP. You need to finish being in SARP, and then we're going to, you know, you have a sponsor, right? And meet up with him and read the big book and go through these steps. You know, God will come when he comes, you know, and if you're doing this stuff, he will, you know. And then, you know, I get out of SARP and I start doing this stuff. And it's still the idea that all I got to be is willing. You know, this idea that God will do it, you know, that is completely opposite of my thinking, you know, because I have to know how it works or why it works. And I want to know the definition of it, because I have to do this thing, you know. And the fact that all this stuff is not in my hands. You know, I've tried fixing things or doing the, you know, trying to manipulate my way into certain things happening, and it just doesn't work, you know. So I need to stop thinking about the outcome. I just need to start worrying about, like, what I, you know, bring forward, you know, my input. And that is the willingness. You know, if I'm willing to do these things, then I'm already willing to believe that God can do this stuff for me, you know. And that's as simple as it needed to be for me in the beginning. And because anything else, I was going to go on tangents. You know, I've worked with, you know, gentlemen that want to know the why, you know, and I don't remember if we'll read that passage later, but there's a passage in We Agnostics that's just like, you know, who cares why it works? It does. You know, like, how about you just drop it right there? You know, and that's what I had to be told. You know, like, just, you know, have that faith again. You know, this is where I get to test my faith, you know, just what little I can muster, and have this willingness to believe that it can work. So I guess we'll go to the next one.
Okay, we're on page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problem by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did.
Yeah, that was the paragraph I was talking about.
I'm trying to think back. You know, I could relate to all of this. You know, we were having trouble with personal relationships, couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. I didn't have a problem with that. I was in the Navy. I had a job. I mean, I was doing okay in that, other than probably I was making a living, but necessarily my home wasn't necessarily getting the money it was supposed to get, because, you know, it was, I would go overseas and they were getting the hotels and the bars and whatever else was getting all the money. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. But I could really, all of this stuff that it, you know, if you see my book, everything there is underlined. I mean, completely, because I could just so identify, and that goes back to what I was talking about, you know, becoming sold on the ideas contained in this book, you know, because it's like, you know, this book really knows me. I mean, it's telling my life story, knows everything about me. And, but to, you know, to, and I don't know about the quit playing God thing, because at that moment, because I don't know that I never really thought I was trying to play God, but what I felt and the way I thought at that time, I felt like, you know, I told you my father committed suicide when he was 42 and my mom died 4 years later at 46 from cancer. You know, and I, you know, so I kind of had to just say, okay, I ain't got nobody else to run to. I got nowhere to go. I got to start taking care of Mark. And, but, you know, I think back when I went through that, and I was in that foster home and all the things I went through in my life, I just felt like I was a survivor, you know, and I got to do what I got to do. And I can't rely, and I never relied on you people, because you people were my problem. You know, and I hated, at the point when I came to these rooms, I hated men, I hated women, at least that's what I thought. What I really hated was me. I didn't know that. You know, and I had a living problem, I didn't really have a drinking problem. I just didn't know how to do this life thing, you know. And but I just was determined, you know. I'm not going to end up like my dad. I'm not going to do these things. I'm not going to be like my brother. I'm not going to be like that person. I'm gonna, you know, and... But I just could never get it right. And so, you know, when it said maybe, you know, I guess what it was telling me is maybe I need to try something different, you know. And when I came here, that's, I remember my sponsor asking me when I asked him to be my sponsor. He said, well, at that time I had not had a drink in like 5.5 years. And he said, I know you've been around and I know you've done some things, you know. And I remember looking at him and saying, you know, and I was crying and begging you people to fix me when I came here the last time. And I remember telling him, I said, you know, I ain't done nothing. That's what I told him. I said, I haven't done nothing. I said, you need to show me. And I didn't say it that nicely. I mean, I was very desperate and I was very blunt. I said, you need to show me. I was about ready to grab him and say, you know, because I that's the way I felt. At that point, you know, when I was getting to this point, I knew that I needed this thing, and if I could get it, I wanted it. But I wasn't sure that could happen. So I'm just going to leave it at that. So.
Thanks. There's that little part right before this paragraph that always was something that stuck with me too, you know. Is not our age characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas for new, by the complete readiness with which we throw away the theories or gadgets which does not work for something new which does? You know, I do that, what, every other year with my phone? You know, like, I'm going to, like, want something that works better. I always do. You know, so why not discard this old idea of what is, you know, my idea of what's right and wrong is obviously flawed. You know, why don't I throw that away for something new that does work? It does work because I've seen it work and the people in these rooms. And, you know, I find it myself very fortunate that, you know, my father had been in AA, you know, and dragged me to meetings when I was young. And, you know, like when I got caught stealing cough syrup or whatever, you know, I was doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And he would drag me to the meetings. And you guys told awesome stories. And I couldn't wait to live the lives that you guys have lived, you know. And I didn't pay attention to that end part because I probably should have been paying attention to that, you know. And but I've seen, you know, I have witnessed, like, the 180 that happens, you know, the people getting set back on their path, you know. I grew up hating my dad, and he became the guy that, like, I, you know, admire most, you know, and all he did was follow these steps, you know, these things. And I'd seen his sponsor, you know, I celebrated my anniversary yesterday, and my dad's sponsor called me yesterday to congratulate me, you know, like, these guys were already a part of my life. Like, I knew AA worked. I just didn't want to admit that I was an alcoholic, you know. Like, at the first reading we had, you know, I tried very hard to prove that I wasn't one of y'all, and then prove myself here. And so, you know, I get here, and I'm you know, I have every one of these things that we just talked about, like that whole checklist, you know. And why does it matter if I know whether it works or not? If it, you know, if it does, I mean, it matters whether it works or not. I know it works. So why does it matter how it works? Like, do I need to have a definition of why it works? You know, I'm studying to be an electrical engineer, and, you know, the things they talk about too is I don't need to know the definition or how electricity works in order to, you know, observe a light, or, you know, to use a stereo or any of the things that we use today. Like, I don't go, I'm not going to use that unless I know how that works. You know, I don't care. You know, I like using things that work. So why not try this way of life that works? You know, and again, I ran out of ideas, and I had very little fight left in me, and I took the suggestions, and thank God that I did.
Going to go on to the spiritual experience, which is in Appendix 2. It's in the back of a book if you've got the complete big book, page 568. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable.
I guess what I think of spiritual experience, I think of the very beginning where it says it's a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. And in the doctor's opinion early on, I'm going to kind of back up here a little bit, but, you know, there's a part in there where it talks about a psychic change, and it says if this person can't have a psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. And that terrified me when I read that. And then the next thing was, I didn't know what that meant. So I remember asking my sponsor in Craddock one night after the meeting, and it was my sponsor and Vernon were standing there. And I asked him, I said, you know, I'm like, what is it? Probably said, like, you know, what the hell is a psychic change, you know? And they said, they both had, I mean, like, together, go home and look it up. You know, I remember being, man, I'm like, I wanted to kick their butts, you know, because I'm like, why can't you just frickin' tell me? You know, I'm mad because, you know, what's the problem, you know? And so anyway, I go home and I look it up. And then I, you know, once I know what it means, I go back on Sunday night to the big book meeting, and I say, well, okay, how do I do that? Because I don't know how to do that. You know, it's changed my mind. I don't know how to change my mind. And my sponsor told me, he said, you change your behaviors, your attitude will change, your attitude changes, your thinking changes. So I guess, you know, for doing these things and doing these simple things that it talks about in the book, and when we talk about coming to believe, you know, I don't know if for me, it wasn't so much about all that. It was just about doing this thing. Just do it. And that's what my sponsor just kept saying. Just do it, damn it. You know, he just kept, whatever it was, it got in the way of me thinking this won't work for me. You know, he just kept, you know, and I'm grateful for that. He was always there to just keep pushing me to do the next thing, whatever it was. And one thing I was thinking about sitting here, I don't know how many of you come into Alcoholics Anonymous maybe for your first time and they say the Serenity Prayer. Do you say the Serenity Prayer? I don't know. A lot of us do. We just say it because everybody else is saying it, you know. But it's a prayer, you know. And then at the end of the meeting, we say the Lord's Prayer. So we get up like everybody else and we hold hands. And I'm not saying everybody does it, but a lot of us do. I did. And I say the Lord's Prayer. And I feel a little uncomfortable doing that, but, you know, I want to be a part of. I've always wanted to be a part of all my life, so I want to be a part of, so I do it. But I remember after a while, I mean, credit, they used to, during the part where it says, forgive us as we forgive those who trespass against us, they would squeeze my hand, squeeze your hands. And, you know, I'm thinking, what's wrong with these people, you know? But I remember one night my sponsor looked at me and he said, you know, he said, prayer, the Lord's Prayer, he said, that's a prayer, it's not a chant. And he said, you know, and he was very specific about it. He said, you will treat it as such. It's exactly how he told it to me. It wasn't really nice either, you know. He was pretty firm about it. And from that day forward, I started to really listen to the Lord's Prayer. And I started to really pay attention when they were squeezing my hands. And it was just little things about like that that helped me to come to believe. Because the more I did these things, the more things started happening in my life. More things started happening that were like, okay, there's something going on here. There is a power greater than me. There's a power greater than all of you. There is something happening here that I cannot deny. And that's what was happening for me, just by doing these things. And I don't know if that helps, but that's kind of was part of my all coming to believe, not just in a God of my understanding or a power greater than myself, but in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's all. Thanks.
Thank you. My sponsor told me that too. And that's another thing that, you know, the longer we stay here, we just add to our relationship with God. You know, when Mark told me that, you know, I almost use it kind of as a chant. And today, it is one of those things where I listen. You know, the me saying it is very secondary to just like hearing a room full of people say this prayer and what it means, you know, and I get that little bit of serenity that we come here for, you know, that sufficient substitute, you know, when I let God into my heart like that. And on the spiritual experience, I like the part where William James calls the educational variety, because I didn't have no burning bush, it just kind of happened. You know, the next thing you know, I'm like regularly saying prayers. You know, when I started off, I didn't know what to say. You know, thank God the big book has like quoted prayers for me, you know, and my sponsor was like, here's a prayer, say that one, you know. So I did three, and then when we got to seven, I did seven, you know, and when we get to the other ones, you know, the more I add to my prayers, obviously the better. And today I can actually say prayers of my own construction. Weird. Again, because I'm like that guy that I'm so logical it has to be done already. Like someone has probably figured out the correct way in which to talk to God, and so I need to follow these things. But again, that whole thing got thrown out when I got the idea, or was my own conception of God. You know, that this is a personal relationship, not like a class relationship, you know, that I have to have a relationship with him, you know, that is probably definitely, I love saying that, but is unique to me, you know, because that's just how I connect with God, you know, and I let that know with the people in my life, and the people I work with, is that, you know, some things that I do are only going to work for me, and they might not work for you, and as we go through this path, you're going to find things that work for you. And so I had the educational variety. I, you know, after a while, I was just suddenly like, oh my God, it happened, you know, and I didn't have to worry. You know, again, it happened without me worrying about it or trying to fix it or force God into my life. It just kind of happened, you know, and this right here, what often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. And I'm a guy with no self-discipline, so that would have taken like decades of self-discipline, you know? I'm still trying to quit smoking, and it's been 7 years, you know? It just, you know, but when it came to this obsession about alcohol, you know, that it had taken place in a few months, which, you know, with me doing on my own would have taken years. In years, if I could have, you know, again, I have come to believe that I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety because I've tried and it just doesn't work. I'd find some little excuse to go through it, you know. And so, you know, here's doctors saying that with a spiritual experience, things can be done in a timely fashion that I like, you know, almost instant, you know, compared to almost never, you know, or taking years and years and years. And the God consciousness is, again, you know, is one of the many gifts that does come once you're fully in this program and once you start doing these things. You know, that I remember, I say it like each time I'm here, I guess, you know, I thought I was retarded at one point because like my brain went a million miles an hour and then one day it like stopped. You know, I just was like, what the hell happened? You know, my brain's not running a freight train. And my sponsor told me that's called peace of mind. And I was like, and it's awesome. You know, I used to be so spun up in my own head that I had to listen to music or something going on all day to like kind of calm and focus my thinking. And today I can just put my head on a pillow and pass out, you know, and it's just, it's amazing what peace of mind, you know, and the God consciousness, you know, that like God's doing for stuff for me that I can't do for myself all the time. You know, the other day, I'm like walking home from my class on campus and it just occurred to me that like I always wanted to go to school in a big city, you know, because I'm from Montana. Norfolk's a pretty damn big city. and I'm like sitting there and there's all this traffic whizzing by and I'm just like, it's happening, you know, without me doing anything. You know, this is, I just did those actions that were asked of me and continue to put a relationship with him and try to put others ahead of myself and this stuff just happens. And again, that's the sufficient substitute. You know, I get that elevation of spirit that I used to get from drinking. I get that from just like letting God into my life. Well, thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. We've got one more reading. We're going to go back in the book to page 17.
Oh,
we are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. But that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for each or for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out in which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism.
Yeah, I'll make it quick. I want to go back real quick about the spiritual experience. When Jesse was talking about the William James Version, the educational variety, I don't know where I heard it early on in sobriety, but I got it in my book, and I got an arrow lined over on page 182, and it says, somebody said this, I don't know, probably it's nothing new, but it said it was $1 million education shoved up my ass a nickel at a time. You know? And I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but, you know, for me, this thing continues to get bigger and bigger. It continues to grow, even over a long 24 hours, you know? So I don't need to get this thing all at once. Where were we at again?
17.
Okay, 17.
We're at the shipwreck.
Yeah, the shipwreck. I had a thought on this.
see that it is here.
Want me to ramble what you think?
Yeah, go ahead. I had a thought, but I lost it.
You'll get it back.
So.
All right. The second paragraph is the one that I really enjoy, you know? And because, again, it's something that has happened in my life. You know, I remember, you know, there's little schisms or whatever, or some people don't do AA the right way or this or that, you know, but what it comes down to is that we have a common solution, you know, and if there is any difference, it's just the little tweaks of which we do in order for people to understand, you know. I was always told there's a wrench for every nut, you know, and it's, you know, some people like that sponsor that's like militant, like you're going to do these things, and I'm definitely don't do well with that one. Mark does really well with me. Enough rope to hang myself, because this one, I'm in pain and hanging myself, like, okay, this wasn't the right thing to do, you know, like we each have different ways in which we learn this stuff, but the actions and the things that are asked of us are all the same, you know, that I need to find a God, and I need to get, I need to have him in my life, and what follows is the actions in which we allow him to enter our lives, and I clean up the wreckage and allow him to be present in my life instead of being consumed by the past or even of the future. You know, I clear away the wreckage of the past, and even, you know, by paying off debts and all the other wreckage of my past, it cleans up the path of my future too, so that I can focus on now. You know, that idea that the presence is where God lives. He doesn't live, you know, in the future. He doesn't live in the past. You know, when I'm in doing God's work, it's when I'm in the, you know, in the moment, you know, doing this thing, and I'm not worried about anything else around me except what's presently in front of me, whether that's talking to a newcomer or being of help or helping a friend move or seeing that some old lady like left her purse in a shopping cart and I go give it to her. You know, I don't do those things. Jesse steals that thing. But when God's in there, like I end up handing it over, and again that little bit of the spirit elevation happens, and I'm like, this is the life that I've always wanted to live. You know, I tried to live this life while drinking, and it just didn't happen. I failed utterly, you know, and I give up my old way of thinking, and I get a new way of life, which is actually what I wanted to be doing, like, my whole life. What I was raised to do, I can do in this program, compared to failing utterly when I was left to my own Jesse code, you know, and it's just many gifts that this program gives that I would have never thought. If you like had me write down the list of things I wanted from this program, I would have left all of them out. I would have been like, I just want to get out of trouble and drink on weekends and not get DUIs, you know, and life is way better than that right now. And the fact that I'm in a fellowship where none of us are saying like you need to fast and jump off a cliff in order to get sober, you know, we all speak the same idea that getting right with God and cleaning up and doing these actions is what's going to get you sober and happy.
Okay, now I remember Joe and Charlie, I don't know if you've ever heard of Joe and Charlie Chase, but they got some pretty good things that they say, and they talk about this chapter, they talk about there's two powers, one's the fellowship and the other one's the spiritual experience. And they say that a fellowship alone is not enough. We have to have a spiritual experience. And when I think about this part that was read, I think about when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I started to do these things and my life started to change and where I'm at today and the joy that I have for Alcoholics Anonymous. I get so emotional and so overwhelmed because, you know, it's just, when I think where I was at and dying, I mean, where I'm at today, it's just overwhelms me every time I talk about it. So the thing is that the way I felt when I came here the last time, drinking or not drinking, I don't care how you get here or when you get here, but that feeling of loneliness and despair, the only alcoholic knows, that feeling of dying and that just all that stuff, I do not wish that feeling upon nobody. And if anything I can say, anything I can do in Alcoholics Anonymous, if it's just opening a door or shaking your hand or welcoming you as a newcomer or sharing my experience, strength, and hope, which the book says we need to do in order to keep this thing, if I can ease your pain in any way or get you on the right track or get you to get this and get what I got, then I want to do anything I can do that. when I was new, I remember being in meetings, and when I was getting this thing, and you were sitting across the table, and you're dying, I wanted to reach across the table and choke you and shake you and say, look, you've got to do this, you know? And sometimes my sponsor would tell me, say, man, you're really getting on your high horse, you know? And, you know, he'd bring me back down to size, but, you know, and not all of us get this, unfortunately. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, we're going to start wrapping it up here. We're going to pass the Seventh Tradition basket. Seventh Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And I'm going to start off with announcements. This group, the end of the month, March 20th and 21st, it's a Friday night and a Saturday. In this room, is going to have a walk through the steps. We've got Bob D. and Valerie D. They're coming here from out of town, and they're going to come First Presbyterian Church Friday, March 20th. It's going to start at 6:30, and it's going to run from 6:30 to 9:30. This is in the evening. And on Saturday, the 21st, they'll wrap up with steps 3 through 12, beginning at 9 in the morning, and we'll finish at 2:30. We'll have a potluck lunch between those. Potluck lunch is going to be at noon, so you can bring a dish if you wish. And all are invited. There's no registration fee or anything like that. It's free, and we'd really love to have y'all come and participate through this walk through the steps. Are there any other AA-related announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise your hand? Mm-hmm. Newcomers. This is the time where we get to know who our newcomers are in the room. Y'all are really important to us, and you got to see tonight that the program works. Is there anyone here in the first 30 days of sobriety? We'd really like to welcome you if you'd like to share your first name with us.
I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rebecca.
Welcome.
My name's Dan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dan. Welcome.
Welcome.
I'm Colin.
All right. Sponsorship, NAA, is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. And if you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we have two people that are going to be up here at the table, Ryan and Rick, if y'all will raise your hands. Okay, thanks. They'll be up here. If you have any questions about sponsorship, feel free to talk to them after the meeting. Spookers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. And all of our meetings are audio recorded, and our upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. If you'd like to be on our email list, like when we have an event like the one here that's coming up, we'll send out like a mass email to remind you and let you know about it. And you can register at simpleactions.net. There's a box at the bottom that will send you a confirmation, and you have to click on that confirmation to be added to it. So if you've done it before and you haven't received anything from us, you may not have confirmed that email. I tried it last week and it works. So just get with one of the home group members if you've done that and it's not working. In closing, we definitely like to thank Mark and Jesse for coming up here. Tonight, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step two at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol. It's at 22nd and Colonial Avenue. We'll be headed there shortly after the meeting after we clean up. And I just need a volunteer who will read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
I'll read it.
Thanks, John.
Our book is to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We will be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. God bless you and keep you until then.
And we'll close with the Lord's Prayer for those that care to join.
My hands are freezing.
Yeah,
I know what's going on,
dude?
They're not cold. They're just in this portion.
Our Father,
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.